welcome to Data Science Perspectives. This series focuses on analytics and data science professionals from across industry to learn about how their career unfolded, what skills they look for when hiring, and what trends they think are coming next. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Let's get to it. Welcome to this episode of Data Science Perspectives. I'm your host, Bill Franks. Today, we're going to be joined by Ann Robinson, the Chief Strategy Officer at Kinaxis. I first met Ann years ago when she was still at Cisco and I was still at Teradata. And over the years, our paths have continued to cross as we both got involved with Informs and the International Institute for Analytics. Ann's been focused on the area of supply chain and supply chain analytics for her entire career. She began at Cisco, where she had multiple roles up to and including a couple of director level roles focused on supply chain. She then went to Verizon, where she had a couple of executive director roles focused on various aspects of supply chain. A few years ago, she moved to Kinaxis, which is a software company, to serve as their chief strategy officer. I think you'll find Ann brings enthusiasm and energy to everything that she does, but she can back that up with her academic credentials as well, with a master's in optimization and a PhD in industrial engineering from Stanford University. So with that, let's welcome Ann to the show. Well, hey, Ann, thanks for joining me on the show today.
Thanks for having me. It's great to see you and be with you again today.
You know, it's interesting that people have different journeys in the analytics space, and you have one that is, by all stretch, isn't totally uncommon, but isn't the most common, which is supply chain. You've kind of been involved in that area since the early stages of your career. What drew you into supply chain and supply chain analytics originally?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I have to go back. So this is a little bit of an old story, but when I finished high school, I applied to 8 different schools in 8 different disciplines, which is crazy to think about now. And one of those was math, and it's where I landed. And I had this amazing math program. And in the second year, I went to a small school, Acadia University on Canada's East Coast. In my second year, I had a chance to go to a conference about careers in math. Now, my peers were going to the ones on actuarial sciences and how to be a high school math teacher. I knew that that wasn't my cup of tea, but I did not know what I was going to do. In my head, I was going to become a lawyer. So the chair of the department said, well, why don't you check out this one on, you know, biology and genetics and whatnot, and then these other ones. And I remember going to see one on OR. Now, the only OR I was familiar with up to this point was operations, was an operating room. And I said, no, it's operations research and go ahead. While I was there, I learned about this, this discipline in which you were applying math to make decision making for business and really focused around planning. And I had always been a very natural planner and kind of gravitated towards this interesting field that I'd never heard of before. Came back, took all the classes I could in from the business school, from within, you know, an optimization expert within the math department, graduated from there, wound up going into the University of Waterloo, focused on transportation logistics, which is really supply chain analytics by another name, and decided to go on and do a PhD in industrial engineering, focusing in production and operations management. Again, maybe not the term supply chain, but certainly the discipline areas that would match up with supply chain. And that's really what launched me into a career. I always wanted to be a practitioner. I know many of my academic counterparts sort of say, you know, why didn't you go into academia? And, I really wanted to see this stuff in action. And I can probably proudly say that I'm one of the few people that have used every aspect of my academic background, particularly the PhD, in practice across various aspects of the supply chain. So when the opportunity came to join Cisco, which is where I started my career, I went in as a supply chain program manager. Again, knew very little about what that actually meant, and spent the first year and a half really doing analytical modeling across various aspects of the supply chain, from very complicated network design to traveling around the world, meeting with the Cisco suppliers and helping them do better inventory management and inventory modeling. So it was it was a natural career evolution from starting a degree in math to becoming a supply chain analytics professional.
Well, when you got into that too, that was, let's say, from a business perspective, doing analytics on supply chain was still relatively new. So how did you navigate your career, you know, moving up the ranks when I'm assuming some of the roles you took were maybe the first of that type and or level within even some of the large companies that you were at as this space evolved underneath you?
Yeah, you're absolutely correct. So I was fortunate enough to go into a company that had an appreciation for advanced degrees applied in the manufacturing sector. And really at Cisco, when I first started, it was the manufacturing, it was called manufacturing. Within a year of me joining, it became supply chain. And there was one other person who had a similar background as mine in the entire, you know, whatever the size of that manufacturing organization. So meeting people that appreciated my academic background and that there was somebody else there. So I knew that truly they weren't looking for just someone to be an Excel jockey, that somebody really had an appreciation. And then as I went through and as we saw that evolution from a manufacturing department to a supply chain organization within Cisco, the opportunities started to unfold. They were functionally aligned. I started really focusing on planning, spent a lot of my time looking at forecasting, statistical modeling, the data models underneath and what that looked like, and really created the first statistical forecasting team in support of all of the products that Cisco created. So it was a little bit identifying the opportunity myself, but having leaders around who are true executive sponsors for that level of analytical rigor and richness and the value that it could bring.
Hearing you say that executive sponsor, that kind of resonates with me as well. I know a lot of folks from our generation, when analytical roles were first getting to be a director level, a VP level, a CAO level, I know in my career as well, it was those one or two people that really got it, who weren't analytical at all by background, but who got it and were willing to sponsor not just analytics conceptually, but me as somebody to help do that. And I think it's interesting. Anyone starting out their career today, finding a sponsor like that, I think is just critical. And I didn't appreciate it when I was younger as much, but over the years, I've realized the importance that those people played in my career.
Paramount to success, I would say.
So one thing I'd be curious about is your view on the challenges and requirements of supply chain analytics that are different from some of the better known, you know, everyone talks about sales analytics, marketing analytics, right? I know there's some very unique things about supply chain that come into play that maybe don't in those. What are your thoughts on that?
I think historically the supply chain analytics space probably focused more in the prescriptive analytics, so the optimization modeling, than necessarily the sales or marketing analytics did. And if you think about supply chain, you don't really have the luxury of doing point in time analytics. Like a chain by definition is multiple levels, multiple echelons. And if you think of a modern supply chain, you rarely deal with a single supplier. You're rarely dealing with a single location. You're rarely dealing with a single distributor, single customer. So we're talking about this very expansive network across which your analytics need to be applied. So that level of complexity that is a necessity for supply chain. Not saying that there aren't very complex. I know there are very complex marketing and sales analytics models out there, but you do have the luxury of doing a point in time snapshot type of work. Whereas in supply chain, we are always thinking about this network, about the time component as well, because things don't magically move across the supply chain without any type of lead time or latency across that end-to-end network. So that also needs to come into play as you're designing your models and really thinking about how close can the solution from that model be reflective of reality in which I need to make decisions. And that's actually one of the things we're really, really focusing on these days, because there's an expectation from a customer perspective to have results, have the right information, the right product at the right place at the right time in the right way when they want it. But there's been so much lack of consistency in the world in terms of disruptions from whether it's the pandemic or a fire or, you know, a transportation disruption or a geopolitical disruption. All of those challenge the supply chain so much that the models need to be agile enough to respond or robust enough to respond as these challenges occur to give the best answer to the problem possible.
I like how you framed that. I hadn't thought about it in that it's such a complicated web that a quick and dirty point analysis, there might be some occasions you could do that for a very tactical reason, but in general, you have to account for the web versus some of the other applications of analytics. There are ways to do the less complicated things distinct from the more complicated things. Speaking of the complication, there's been multiple trends that have impacted analytics in general over the last couple of years, you know, starting with big data, more recently AI and cloud, that have really caused some rethinking about both what kind of data and analytics are available to us and how do we execute them. I presume these trends also impacted a lot over your years of viewpoint of what you've seen evolve in supply chain analytics.
I think so. You know, I've always been a big believer in the toolbox, right? You want to understand the right tool to solve the problem, and our toolbox keeps getting richer. And it doesn't matter what kind of analytics, and we're all very fortunate about this, the advancements in the AI ML modeling, the availability of the horsepower to do those models in a more comprehensive fashion. But ultimately, all of these new techniques, so yes, there is a request across supply chain leaders to apply more, let's call it digital intelligence through the supply chain, how they can leverage these different tools. Really, you know, if you think about, let's talk about disruptions. And in a moment in time, yes, that historical data that is interesting to a supply chain performance, but you also need to understand what's happening from a competitive landscape, what's happening from a weather perspective, what's happening from a disruptions perspective. So that richness of information and indicators around supply chain performance, bringing those into your models in different kinds of way. A lot of the AI ML techniques, assuming you have enough data, and I don't need to tell you about that, right, that to make these models work. But ultimately, at the end of the day, it needs to be an understanding of the analytics and the humans in the process, because it's the humans that are ultimately the ones that can have an understanding and appreciation around that moment in time, that have the consciousness that they can bring into the circumstances. And, you know, the analytics aren't the ones that are being held accountable at the end of the day. So we've seen the best success in having the most intelligence available to you, but that partnership with the human consciousness, the human in the loop, the combination of those two are really what's going to drive the next generation supply chain excellence.
Well, I guess speaking before we get to the next generation, let's just think about you a little bit. Over your career, what are one or two of the skills or traits that you have that, as you look back, you think have really helped you get ahead?
I think one of the biggest ones, and one that I say to every one of my academic counterparts, you need to add this into your curriculum, is around the science of change. Change management. Humans are resistant to change. It's just our nature. And if you come in with a complicated analytic solution that is very counterintuitive to how they're working today, you're going to face a ton of resistance. And operations research optimization, by its very nature, will often provide you with a counterintuitive solution. So without that awareness, without that understanding of how to bring humans into the process to understand what the change is, how it's going to impact them, you're going to find the adoption of an appreciation, understanding, and adoption of your results from your modeling are implemented, appreciated, used so much more readily when you have that understanding of change management. So that's a huge one. The second one, I think, is that ability, the storytelling ability, and how do you actually put your analytics into context? You know, I started public speaking as a child. It was something, something in the back of my head. So this was a skill I needed to figure out. And it's one that has carried with me, that ability to go in front of an audience and understand what the challenges are in the models that I've been developing, put it in the context of the business, and being able to articulate it from a business value perspective. That storytelling is so, so important. So schools that require you to give presentations, to understand the business context, to translate your results into business value, that is such an important skill. I don't know that I've really solidified any of those during my academic journey, but I certainly learned them pretty early on once I got into the work world.
Interesting. Yeah, that thing about the change management is really key too, because I think you'd agree with me. One thing that a lot of technical people in general, not just analytical folks, struggle with at times is stepping out of the theory and stepping out of those details to say, what is it going to mean to those that I'm talking to, both from a business perspective, but also that operational and effort perspective? And if you don't account for that, you're going to end up, you could actually look literally foolish at times, because someone will go, that all sounds great, but we can't do that. And here's why. And you should know that. And you just end up with a black eye. And then you don't end up with the executive director positions and chief strategy officer positions that you've ended up with.
It's so important. I would go as far as saying, you cannot be successful as an analytics practitioner without change management skills.
Yeah, very good advice. Another thing you've done that I think stands out from some folks is you got involved in leadership roles and volunteering, like with the Informs organization. And I think you were even the chair for a year. What motivated you to get involved in some of these more, you know, volunteer professional organizations, and how did that help enhance your career and your visibility?
Yeah, it was an amazing, I'd say I was raised by Informs, and I would still say that today. You know, I'm not sure what motivated me to join initially. I was trying to think about that, and other than sort of contributing back to the profession. And I am a huge believer that it's, regardless of our seat, it's all our professional responsibilities to contribute back to the profession. But when I started at Informs, I had the good fortune of being involved with a more senior practitioner group. And I had an opportunity to meet people in every stage of a career that I wished to have. And through my journey, I learned how to build an analytics team, what skills they needed to become leaders themselves, how to help, you know, cultivate advanced analytics team members so that they could deliver the best value, how to put it in the context of the business. And that was through mentorship by many people. I will go as far as say, I think you and I had several conversations along the way around how do you make this career path more enriching to me, but also to the people around me, and in a way that contributes back to the profession. I think that is even more important now. You see far few lifer type of positions where you start in one company and you stay there for your entire career. And so without that type of structure, you're not necessarily going to have those sponsors and mentors in the company to guide you on your career path. Professional societies offer you an opportunity to meet experts, to meet people who can be with you through your career. And as you change companies, this might be the glue that holds it all together that can provide that guidance. So I strongly encourage, you know, everyone to find their professional society home. You want to make sure that it's valuable to you, but by identifying experts, identifying people who are 2, 3, 4 steps further along in their career path than you would like to be, they can help you. They can help you evolve. And chances are, once you find one that works for you, that might be the place where you stick around for your career.
Interesting perspective. You know, when you mentioned about finding and getting that mentoring through those groups as well, what's one thing that you wish someone had told you before you started working that you ended up having to learn the hard way on the job?
You know, I think I've already said it. It's those soft skills that complement your technical skills. Learn your science. You always want to understand your craft, know your math, know your analytics, know the latest, you know, get your specialties. Don't necessarily be married to them. If you have a coding language or two in your background, great. But I wished I had learned change management before I left the PhD program. I wish I had focused more on program management skills before I had entered into the work world. Those, you know, so-called business or maybe softer skills complemented with a rich technical analytical background, that's really a magical combination for success. whether you go into a, you know, a an industry type of organization, a consulting type of organization, a vendor type of organization, it can be pervasively applicable.
Well, you know, when you think about our conversation, you know, when we started out, there wasn't much of a career path in large analytics organizations. Today, someone coming out of school, I mean, there's so many different directions you could go and have a robust career in analytics. What advice would you have for students is, if they're graduating, in terms of how do they decide where is their place, even if they're sold on doing analytics and data science? What's their niche, and how do they figure out where they belong at the beginning?
Yeah, it's a good question. So I think it's really understanding what it is you're looking for. Make sure that you understand, again, your craft and your science. You don't need to be the best coder. You don't need to be the best, have a PhD level of technical depth, depending on what you're interested in doing. There are roles available at many different levels. When you speak to somebody in an organization, ask to speak to the peers, ask them about their day-to-day. See whether that resonates with what you're looking for. I would go as far as saying, as we see this AI ML wave, the advances in cloud computing, there are very few roles that will not require an appreciation for analytics. So whether or not you want to come in with a very hands-on mathematical coding role, a very hands-on model development role, or you're thinking, you know, I want to be more in an in-between role where I'm focusing on management and leadership in a different kind of way, all of your analytics skills will become valuable, because you need to be able to understand what are the tools that are being used, what does the output mean, have you validated the assumptions? All of these things that are somewhat textbook become relevant no matter what level of business you're actually you're looking to aspire to as an individual. I think it's really important to appreciate the depth of technical requirements and the business knowledge along with it, the two of them together in the context in which it's being applied. It's so important for making the best decisions for the business as well as for yourself.
Well, I'll tell you, before we run out of time, I'll just finish off. As you look forward the next, say, 3 to 5 years, what's a trend you think is going to be big around the world of supply chain analytics?
Yeah, I think we've seen the marriage between prescriptive and predictive analytics continue to evolve, particularly as there is this need to focus on agile supply chain response. So whether you're talking about the AI ML modeling with the OR type of modeling coming together, there's a lot more conversations happening in that domain. Then from an actual sort of function perspective, I think risk management continues to be of paramount importance, particularly from a cybersecurity perspective. If you think supply chains across those networks are essentially a networks of IoT devices, and every one of those IoT devices becomes a possible vulnerability. So that is going to continue to be important. And sustainability is a conversation that it's not a new one, right? Closed loop supply chains, reverse supply chains. I've been playing in that space most of my career as well, at least tangentially. But with recent shifts in regulatory requirements, investment requirements, we're seeing a lot more emphasis on supply chain role in the ESG requirements. So particularly the environmental focus. And I think we're going to see our analytics come into play in a different kind of way around sustainability.
Well, I want to thank you. I know you're very busy, and I appreciate you taking a little time out to talk with me today. And I think your insights were terrific. So just thanks for coming on the show, and I'll look forward to seeing you around at another supply chain event.
That sounds great. Thanks, Bill. Thanks for having me today.